people who have heard my shiur before know that an average shiur, a typical shiur, usually starts off either with a quote from the Gemara, or perhaps a quote from the Rambam, maybe a din in Shulchan Aruch. So we'll have the Aleph Abdullah, I'm going to start off the shiur with a little bit of a different quote, and I'll tell you why. But this past Friday night, at my Shabbos table, we were talking about something that we usually don't necessarily talk about in the Shabbos meal, but only because my 7th grade son happened to be reading Tom Sawyer this week in school. So we started talking a little bit about Tom Sawyer. So I was trying to remember, you know, Gius of Yankas, the things you remember when you were a kid. I remember Machoikis Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn. I'm trying to remember some of the Rashi Prakim. But whole lost in the oven, we talked a little bit about Tom Sawyer. So I asked my son, I said, you know, do you know anything else that Mark Twain wrote? So I said, if I remember correctly, there were two very famous essays that Mark Twain wrote, which Lafinius Dieti are much more important for us than Tom Sawyer, than Huckleberry Finn, than everyone all rolled into one. And I want to speak primarily about one of them. I'll allude to the other. But I want to speak really in terms of Hashkafas HaChaim, something, an important lesson that we can actually walk away with. There were two very famous essays about that Mark Twain wrote. One of them was about the Jew, about the, in a sense, the enigma, the puzzle that he couldn't figure out what exactly is the secret of the Jew. That was number one. And the other one was an essay that he wrote, a very tragic essay that he wrote when he came to visit Eretz Yisrael in the 1800s. You have to have come to Eretz Yisrael. We know what Eretz Yisrael looked like. We know a little bit about history of Eretz Yisrael. And in the days of Mark Twain, 150 years ago, it was Mamash of Midbar Shemama, it was Mamash of Desert, it was a wasteland. There was nothing here. Don't believe what anyone else tells you, that there was a thriving, other people said thriving, and there was nothing, zero, nothing. It was Mamash of Midbar Shemama. So he writes and he describes the waste and the nothingness, the emptiness that was in Eretz Yisrael. One can just imagine if you would have a Tchis Amesi, if you'd come walk the streets of Yerushalayim today, he would it would be hard for him to believe. It gives us a little bit of a chizit. It should be hard for us to believe also. It should just give us halav odot to Kodesh Baruch to have such a beautiful place of Eretz Yisrael today. But that's, I don't want to speak about that essay. I want to speak about the other one. He raised the question, it's a tzarchi, and he asks. He said, he doesn't understand the Jew. What's beyond the Jew? He doesn't understand. There were many, many people from antiquity. There were ancient Egyptians, there were ancient Romans, there were ancient Greeks, ancient Persians. There were loads of them, there were loads of them, and none of them exist today. The Egyptians today are not the Egyptians of old. Whatever's going on in Egypt today, nothing to do with the Tisbe tribe, nothing to do with it. Different people, different ethnicity, different culture, different language, they have absolutely nothing to do with the days of Paro. The people who are walking around the Yavan today have nothing to do with Antiochus. They have no connection, they're not related, they're not part of the legacy, not part of the culture, nothing to do with ancient Greece. The people who are in Italy today, what do they have to do with the ancient Romans? The people who are sitting and eating pizza and pasta, there's nothing to do with Rome, nothing to do with Julius Caesar, nothing, zero. They're in the same place, but in terms of culturally, in terms of Islam, in terms of religiously, it's a totally different society, totally different culture. And yet, notes, observes Mark Twain, when it comes to the Jewish people, so we find an amazing phenomenon. He said the Jews today are the same Jews of old. They're the same Jews of the Middle Ages and the same Jews of the world, of the ancient world. They're the same. And it's a pella. He says, what are they doing here? They don't belong here. He said, there were other ancient empires that ancient Egypt was amazed. They ruled the world. Alexander the Great ruled the world. The Roman Empire ruled the world. The Jews were nothing. They were even in their heyday, they were nothing. And Kal Vachomer, throughout most of history, they had no power, they had no nation, they had nothing going for them. All they had was anti-Semitism and persecution. And based on all the basic rules of history, the Jews shouldn't exist at all. Says Mark Twain, not only do they exist, but they thrive. And again, he's using from a secular, from a non-Jewish point of view, he's pointing, what does it mean to thrive? So he talks about the great advances they've made in medicine and in its culture and art. We're not focusing on that right now. But his soul is correct. That it's a pilly ploy, it's not a kash, it's harder than all the kashes of Rabbi Kivag, all rolled into one. He said, what is Klai Yisrael still doing here? We should have left long ago, we should have exited stage left 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, if pogroms and persecutions and holocausts and inquisitions, we should not be here anymore. And yet we're here, we're alive and well, and Baruch Hashem thriving. Tzarchi and Gol. That's how we conclude this essay. So like any good shiur, we ask a good kash, you gotta give a good terence. So I want to try to give a terence. I want to try to explain to us, each and every one of us sitting here, what Lafinius Dieti is, the emes lamito terence to Mark Twain, and really to see how this is a mechayev to us, how this really puts everything that we're doing, all the learning, the stuff that we're trying to accomplish this year, and hopefully we have to show for our entire lives, to put everything into the proper perspective. So I want to share a few stories, One of them, somewhat of a famous story, some of you may have heard it before, but I'll tell it quickly because I want to lead up into another story and try to give a little bit of a shikvali to try to solve this dilemma of what we're doing here, what we're all about. The story is told about the Panovich Rosh Shiva, the original Panovich Rosh Kahaneman. So Rav Kahaneman was apparently, like any good Rosh Shiva, was running around collecting money for the yeshiva. So he was had to come to Italy, had to come to Rome. So he was supposed to spend some time in the Jewish community in Rome to spread the word of his yeshiva. So he comes to Rome, and he arrives in Rome in the middle of the night. There are different versions of the story, whether it was the shamus who picked him up, whether it was a taxi driver who picked him up. Again, depending on the version, it doesn't really matter. To yourselves. He arrives in the airport in Rome in the middle of the night, and whoever comes to pick him up and says, okay, esteemed Rosh Hashiva, we can take you to your hotel room, we can take you to the Balva, wherever we can take you to. So he says, no. He says, you can't take me to where I want to go first. I have one stop to do. Something very important I have to go see in Rome. So the driver looked at him, he was from Sugar. He said, what are you going to go see at 2 o'clock in the morning in Rome? There's very little excitement in Rome. The pizza stores are closing. What are you going to see at 2 o'clock in the morning in Rome? So he says, I want you to take me to the Arch of Titus. So many of you may know that the Arch of Titus was that structure, that architecture was built by Titus HaRosha in commemoration of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara even refers to it a little bit. The Gemara describes about how after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, how the Romans took all the kalim, all the beautiful vessels that we read about in these week's parashas, he took them to the streets of Rome and paraded them in a victor's march in the streets of Rome. And in fact, this was depicted on this piece of architecture, the sculpture, and the Arch of Titus that still stands in Rome at the Yemazeh. You can see the menorah, and you can see the chatzotzeros, so and you can make out some of the other kalim. You can see different parts of the Beis HaMikdash that were mamish in being paraded, literally spoiled through the streets of Rome. So he wanted to go see the Arch of Titus. Now again, it's true, the Arch of Titus happens to be a big tourist attraction, that's true, but a little bit strange, Rav Kahaneman at 2 o'clock in the morning in Rome, that's where he had to go, take me to the Arch of Titus. Kahav, Kevdrans comes, takes him to the Arch of Titus, and he gets out of the car, and he looks up at the Arch, and he says to the Arch, he says, Titus, Harasha, Titus, the one, the general, the Roman general, destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, who exiled Klal Yisrael, who brought the Kalim and marched through the streets of Rome. Titus, where are you today? Who are you today? Where are your Talmidim today? Where's your legacy? No one ever heard of you, if not for your architecture. No one ever heard of you, if not for the Gemara Kamsev HaKamsev. It wouldn't be that you're not allowed to learn anything else on Tisha B'Av. No one would ever remember this Gemara either. It's in the Tisha B'Av Gemara, in Perkei Zaken. Titus, you're a garnish, you're nothing, you're a piece of dust in history. He said, talking to the Arch, the Kiev Drag must have told his mom, talking to the Arch, says, you know what I am? I've been a Rosh Hashiva. I'm a Rosh Hashiva in Panovich. I have hundreds of Tamidim, I have thousands of Tamidim. We're the ones that you tried to kill off 2,000 years ago. You're nothing. Baruch Hashem, we're alive and well. Torah is alive and well. Tells the cab driver, I can take me to my hotel room. That was the discussion. That was the conversation that Titus, that Kahaneman Zatzal had with Titus HaRosha. I don't advertise to be collecting for Panovich Yeshiva. I'm not even collecting for YU. I'm just here to say shiurim for YU. But I have to tell the following story. And the following story I can tell you with absolute certainty is true because I was involved. I was involved in the story. It also happened in Rome. I was only in Rome one time in my life. And the only reason why I ended up in Rome, I've told the story over some people have heard in the past, but the only reason why I ended up in Rome was really not exactly my planning. It wasn't in my itinerary for travel plans. But one time I was flying back from Israel several years ago, and we took off on the Motzei Shabbos, and about 2 hours or so into the flight, there was an announcement over the system. Usually the announcement is, everybody to sit down, there's turbulence or something, so you know we're all used to those announcements. This was a little bit more dramatic than that. The pilot gets up and he says, we're having a little bit of a problem on the plane. That's not a good thing you want to hear on the plane. My wife is still sleeping. I figured, why should I wake up? Why should I bother? We're going to crash, so you know, we might as well get a few more minutes of sleep. So as the pilot says, but no reason to worry, which is a good way of telling us that we should be worrying. There's no reason to worry. We just blew one of the engines. So that's the bad news. The good news is that we have three other engines that are left. The bad news is that you're not allowed to cross the Atlantic with only three engines, because even though the plane can fly, but if one of the plane, if another engine goes, since they can't figure out why the first one went, so if the other engine goes, then we're going to have a real problem. So now we only have a half a problem. So the bottom line is we have to make an emergency landing. That's Tachlis. So we have to make a landing at the closest airport. It happened to be in Taco. We were flying right out of Italy. So we're about to make an emergency landing in Rome. So everyone, stay tight. So Kachava, so we landed in Rome on an early Sunday morning. Needless to say, imagine trying to get your car fixed in Rome on a Sunday morning. They're very religious in Rome Sunday morning. So try to get your plane fixed. It's not going to work too well either. So I told us, forget it. We're not going to get another plane. So you got to wait another 7 or 8 hours or so until they kind of throw us onto another flight. So Kachava, so we're in Rome. So what do they say? We're in Rome, like the Romans, we're in Rome, so you got Dam Chakras. No matter where you got Dam Chakras. So we were, it was a flight, you can imagine, one knows what the typical Motzei Shabbos flight going back to America is. There was a combination of half Hasidim and half YU guys. It was right at the end of a winter break, so it was pretty much what the makeup of the plane was. And we get around, start the Dam Chakras. As with Dam Chakras, we noticed there are about 30 soldiers and Roman policemen who start to make a circle around us. And we all started to get frightened. We thought that maybe it's against the law to daven in Rome. And we're not sure what exactly was going on. And everyone's getting ready to try to explain what's happening. And then all of a sudden we realized, and one of them explained to us, no, we're here just to protect you. You know, anti-Semitism in Europe, you don't want to start up. So we're here to protect you while you pray. And they made Mamash a circle around us. And I started to get the goosebumps at the time. And I thought to myself, and I said, can you imagine, we're Jews, 2,000 years after the Churban, davening at Talis and Tefillin, saying the same Shema Yisrael, davening the same Shema Nesrei, and who's protecting us? The Roman soldiers, the great, 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 great grandchildren of those who destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, those who were convinced that there would be no Klal Yisrael, and their descendants are protecting the descendants of Abiseinu who left Eretz Yisrael as Goyim as Avodim. We came back just to Dam Shachris in Rome. I've made it my point. This happened about the. 14, 15 years ago, I made it my point every single Tisha B'Av, no matter where I am, whether it's in NCS white color, it's in my shul, whatever that, I always tell the story of Tisha B'Av. That this is the, whenever we get to the kina about the Titus, I always tell the story that this is Mamish our legacy, this is our history, that Klal Yisrael survives, no matter what happened, Klal Yisrael still survives. So that was the second story. So we got two stories, one more story, then we have to get to the punchline, then I have to explain what's really going on. The third story also, I can tell you for sure is true, because I was also involved over that. So you hang around long enough, you get to write your own story about yourself. So the third story happened, and I understand from just all the announcements, there's a trip to Poland being planned. So I think when you mention those who go to Poland, remember the story. This particular story didn't take place in Poland, it took place in Germany, but I was there, it was actually the same week that I was in Poland, and the story happened on a Friday afternoon in Germany. I was, at the time, I had gone to Berlin, as you may know, there's a yeshiva in Berlin, that's all about a tshuva, beautiful, beautiful yeshiva. So I went to spend a couple of days there, and the reason why I went on the trip was there was a Chag HaSmicha. It was the first musmachim that ever received smicha since 1939. So in 70 years, hadn't been smicha, for obvious reason, been given in Germany. And they gave it, and I went to be part of that tech, part of that ceremony of Chag HaSmicha, a very beautiful, moving experience. And after the Chag HaSmicha, so I joined some of the bachim from the yeshiva. We ran around Poland, and in a whirlwind trip of 2 days ago. How long are you guys going for? A week, okay. So they told us that you need about a week to do Poland, but they'll do it all for us in 48 hours, provided we don't eat or sleep or do anything else. So that's exactly what we did. So don't worry, there's no food anyway to eat, and go to Poland, you have no desire to sleep, you just are so overwhelmed with what's going on. So we spent a couple of days literally running around Poland. We came back to Germany, we came back to Berlin for Shabbos. So it was the first time I'd ever been in Berlin. Friday afternoon, one of the Bachman Yeshiva took us around to show us some of the sights in Berlin. What does a Jew want to see in Berlin? So he took us to the place where Hitler Yimach Shemo died, and he committed suicide, to the bunker. And you can't see the bunker. The bunker was 50 feet on the ground, and it's been blown up and everything since then. But an Osam Bachman, Mamash, and that place, basically the place you stand on top of where Russia Marusha's bones are riding 50 feet beneath. So that's where we were standing. That's where basically where World War II ended. For all practical purposes, where the Holocaust came to an end. And I was standing on that spot on Friday afternoon. After having spent an entire week in Poland with these bachurim saying shirim, basically that was my job. Every place we went to, I said, we went to the Ramah Shul, I had to give a shir on the Ramah. We went to Reb Chaim's camp, we had to give a shir on Reb Chaim. Every goal we met, so I had to, not real goal, was still alive, but any place that we went to, I had to give a shir, and none of the mokum, and none of the yoma. That was basically my role on the trip. So I had just been running around with a bunch of 20 boys who were all Balei Tshuva. Many of them didn't even know they were Jewish until a few years before. And I had such unbelievable chizuk, and here I'm standing on the grave of Nazism, and I was just standing and just trying to, you know, put together my emotions and my thoughts. So there was somebody with another older Rav who was with us who put his arm around me and he said, "Do you realize?" He said, "You're a Rosh Hashiva." He said to me, "You're a Rosh Hashiva, and you're standing on his grave, and you're saying Shiurim in Berlin, of all places." He said, "Can you imagine the Nitzchis of Klal Yisrael? Imagine the eternal destiny of the Jewish people. Is there any greater raya brura to the eternity of Klal Yisrael than a Rebbe or a Shiva Magichir standing in Berlin, being able to, a group of Bacharim, and being able to continue to say Shiurim?" That's what he said to me. I was thinking, yeah, I'm not the Panamish Rosh Shiva. I don't plan to be the Panamish Rosh Shiva. They're not looked at hard as Rosh Shiva. But I felt, it was at that moment when the story about Rav Kahaneman came back to me. So I realized the common theme behind all three stories. Rav Kahaneman standing in front of the Arch of Titus, myself standing and davening Shacharis in the airport in Rome, and then being standing in Berlin by the top of the bunker, and being able to walk away on a Friday afternoon and go spend Shabbos. And in fact, that Friday night, so I gave a talk to a group of, not even yet Balei Tshuva, a group of young German boys and girls. It was like the counterpart, it was like the NCSY of Germany, so to speak. And I gave a talk to them. It was late Friday night. It was June time, so those who know the Zmanim in that part of the world, Shkia was about 11 o'clock, and Seis was about 1 o'clock, about 2 o'clock when we finished the Shabbos meal. So I started to speak to them. And I opened up by saying the following, which should sound familiar to me. I opened up to this group. I had no idea what I was going to talk about them. They didn't really know too much in terms of Torah. So somebody said, just talk to them about something they'll be able to relate to. So I took a shot without knowing whether I would succeed or not. And I started up by saying, I don't know what's in the curriculum in your high schools in terms of literature. I said, but I imagine some of you may have heard of Mark Twain. And Baruch Hashem, it was a shot in the dark, because it could be they may not know what I was talking about. But Baruch Hashem, they did. They read Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn. They knew about what I was talking about. I said, well, let me start off with a quote from Mark Twain. And I started exactly the way I started with you guys. I asked them a question, the same question. I asked, what's the secret of the Jew? How come we're still here? We weren't supposed to be here. We're not supposed to have survived this war. There shouldn't be any Jews, forget about, left in Europe. There shouldn't be any Jews left in the world. There shouldn't be Jews in Eretz Yisrael. What are we doing here? How did we survive? And what's the secret of Jewish history? I threw out the same question to them as I threw out to you. Now I want to try to see if we can answer this question. The Torah tells us in Parshas Vos Chanon that each and every Jewish parent, each and every Jewish grandparent, has a basic fundamental responsibility. The responsibility is v'hodatam levanecha v'livnei vanecha, that we are obligated to transmit it. For these words, I haven't yet defined what they are. V'hodatam levanecha v'livnei, we are obligated to transmit this to our children and this to our grandchildren. Of course, the obvious question is, what is the this? What exactly is it that we're supposed to transmit? So if you look at the context of the psukim are talking about the following. The psukim tell us in Parshas Vos Chanon that we have to transmit it, and we have to make sure never to forget it. And again, it's also unclear. Don't forget what you saw. And again, it's unclear what are we not allowed to forget, and what are we obligated to transmit. So if we take a look at the Mishnah, Pirkei Avos, the Mishnah tells us, Kol ha-shechech davarecha mitamudo, mischayev nafsho. A person forgets even one word that he learns, so he's ki'ilu mischayev misa. No, ki'ilu, don't feel bad. It's not really chayev misa, but ki'ilu chayev misa. It's a terrible thing. A person learns something and forgets something. That's a terrible problem. And therefore, the Torah says we have to make sure to review our learning, v'odat levanecha v'nei v'necha, transmit it to our children. So there is a machlekes at Rishonim, how to understand pshat in these psukim, how to understand pshat in this Mishnah, which I think really all the different pshat in Rishonim will really answer, ultimately, the answer to this question that we're posed. Comes Rabbeinu Yonah in his Perush on Pirkei Avos and says, what is so terrible about forgetting one's learning? Says Rabbeinu Yonah, is that if a person forgets what he learns, that's going to impact on his ma'isim, on his mitzvos. Shigas Talmud Olos Adon, if a person doesn't learn properly, then he's not going to be able to perform the mitzvos properly. And here Rabbeinu Yonah is touching on one dimension of Talmud Torah. There's one aspect of learning Torah that Gadol Talmud should make l'day ma'aseh, that if a person wants to be able to do mitzvahs properly, so he has to learn, hey, lo am ha'aretz chosid, that a person cannot take the approach, it's an untenable approach to say, I'm going to be a Torah observant Jew, I'm going to be very committed, but learning is not for me. So that's not an option. There's no such thing. Different people like different parts of Torah. Some people perhaps get more out of that Masechta and this Masechta, perhaps this Derech HaLimud, that Derech HaLimud. Some people may perform Shnayis. Those are details. We can negotiate, we can talk about details. But for a person to take the all-encompassing attitude that I'm going to be a Shomer Torah mitzvahs, but I'm not going to be Lomei Torah, that learning Torah is just not for me, I'm all for mitzvahs, but not for learning Torah, it's not possible. It's not practical. It doesn't work. It just And that's what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. We have to focus on learning, because if we think that we're going to transmit just Shmiras and mitzvahs to the next generation without Levin HaTorah, it's not going to work. So Levin HaTorah, first and foremost, is the mechanism, is the way, is the vehicle in order to make sure that Shmiras and mitzvahs, in fact, takes place. Over the course of the last 2 hours, I had a few conversations with different people, and many of the Bacher, many of your friends, so many of you asked me pretty much the same question in a little bit of a different setting. Many of you were bothered with the same thing. You know, many of us, many of you are going back to America. Some are going back for the summer. Some are going back for next year. Some are Shana Aleph going to come back for Shana Bet, but eventually going to go back. And Rabbi, what do we do to remain committed to the Shmiras HaMitzvahs? How do we know there's so many things, so many influences, so many things going on college campuses, and in the workplace, and in the communities that someday we'll live in? So many different distractions and things that are going to make it so difficult. Give me the secret. What is it that's going to make sure that I'm from? I want to be Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. I want to be from. I want to be Yirei Shemayim. I want my children to be from. I want my grandchildren to be from. Tell me what's the secret. So I told them all the same. I told every one of you, I gave the same answer. So I'm a rav in a shul in Bergenfield, Tina. Those are from Bergenfield. They know it's pretty much the same thing, across the street. So I could see, if I have a fairly young community, average age, around in the early 30s, and I could see which homes are built on the pillars of Torah. I could see right away, you see it in the children, you see it in the husbands, the wives, you see everything, you see it in the whole Shmiras HaMitzvahs, and there's one common denominator. And I'll tell you what it is. The people who, when they come home from work, yes, they come home and they eat supper, speak to the wife, the children a little bit, but come back to the Beis Medrash. The ones who have been night sitting, the Baal HaBavdim were in the Beis Medrash an hour, 2 hours, every night. Well, I'm talking about people who are working hard. You know, it's a tough economy out there, people work late hours. But the people who come home and they are Kaveitim L'Torah, the people who are involved in learning, it's not just pshat that they learned another 20 plot a year. It's not just pshat they finished a few more Prachim Mishnayas. Not just pshat they learned a few more Prachim and Chumash. It's much more than that. Talmud Torah ultimately defines a person's Shmiras HaMitzvahs. It's the engine that keeps the whole system running. If you pull out, if you close down Torah, if you leave the Beis Medrash and you think you're going to be able to remain a Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, it's time-tested, it doesn't work. Talmud Torah is the absolute prerequisite to a life of Shmiras HaTorah Mitzvahs. So if you want to be Shmiras HaTorah Mitzvahs, you want your children to be, you want your grandchildren to be, V'odatam l'vnecha l'devanecha, says Rabbeinu Yonah, you can't stop learning. You can't forget your learning. You can't say, well, learning's not so important, I'll do the Shmiras Mitzvahs without learning. It's not going to work. That's the first part of V'odatam l'vnecha l'devanecha. There's a second half of V'odatam l'vnecha l'devanecha. The Rambam in the Talmud Torah writes that a person is required to learn Torah until when? Ad Yom Moso. Until the day that he dies. Says the Rambam, a person is always obligated in the midst of Talmud Torah. He's obligated. The Rambam goes to all the different life excuses. So the Rambam says, if a person is sick, he's chayav to learn Torah. If a person is poor, he's chayav to learn Torah. Any distraction, all the different problems that he has, he's still chayav to learn Torah. Then the Rambam says, and those who have children will appreciate this, the Rambam says that those who are poor are chayav to learn Torah, and those who are sick are chayav to learn Torah. and those who are suffering a Cheres Mentorin. Even, says the Rambam, even, the Rambam says, Afilu, Afilu always means, this is the greatest Chiddush. The greatest Chiddush, what's the greatest Chiddush? Afilu, says the Rambam, Baal Isha Ubanim. Even a person who's married with children, means more than the Ani, and more than the Baal Yisurin, and more than the Chayla. The person also has to live Torah. Even if he has children, even if he has to help the children with the homework, and even if his wife needs him to go to the store, and even if he's got to go take his drive his kid's car by. Afilu, 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 afilu. Afapichein yimachuyv in Talmud Torah. So comes the Rambam and says, how do you know that you have to learn ad yom mosi? You have to learn until the last day of your life. Says the Rambam, well, because it says, Petishkach has a dvar mesha ruay necha. The post that we just quoted. Petishkach has a dvar, says the Rambam, because we're afraid, otherwise you're going to forget. If a person doesn't keep on learning, keep on learning, keep on learning, he's going to forget. So comes with Moshe Feinstein in the tshuva and he writes, what do you see from the Rambam? The Rambam is defining the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. The Rambam is not talking about shmiras ha-mitzvahs here. The Rambam is not talking about Rabbi Yonah's living, being from. The Rambam is talking about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah, says the Rambam, is to learn Kol Torah Kula. If a person forgets his learning, he's not fulfilling Kol Torah Kula, because the mitzvah is to know Kol Torah Kula. If a person forgets, so then he's not being yodeh Kol Torah Kula. So you want to know what our goal is? Everybody said we have very, very high goals. Our goal is to learn Kol Torah Kula. Now, granted, it's true. Many of us may not actually reach that goal, myself included. It's quite a high goal, but we shouldn't lose sight of the goal. As they say, when you set your sights on the stars, you may not reach the stars, but at least you'll end up out of the mud. So a person should set goals. A person should, I want to learn more. I finished the Masechta Baruch Hashem. I should be thrilled. I should be happy and satisfied. Time to start another one. I shouldn't rest on my laurels. I shouldn't take the attitude that, well, I learned, 50%. No. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah is something that keeps a person going. Yoyimam balayla. Doesn't mean necessarily there aren't other things he has to do. He's going to go to school. He's going to make a prognosis, take care of his family. We have a lot of commitments. Everyone has a lot of commitments. But the goal is Yedias Kol Torah Kula. And if a person has that commitment, then he stands a fighting chance to be able to transmit it to the next generation. Then he may be able to fulfill Vodatma V'nechel V'nechel. So we really have Rabbi Yonah and the Rambam talking about two different dimensions of Talmud Torah. Rabbi Yonah is talking about Talmud Torah as the way to ensure a life of Shmiras HaMitzvahs, and the Rambam is talking about Talmud Torah as a goal in itself. Nothing to do with Shmiras HaMitzvahs. The Beis HaLevi has a famous drush on Parshas Mishpatim. Beis HaLevi writes that it says in the Chumash Nasa V'Nishma, Klai Yisrael accepted upon themselves Nasa V'Nishma. Says the Beis HaLevi, Nasa means Shmiras HaMitzvahs. Nasa means we have to keep all the mitzvahs, and we have to learn Mishneh Berurah, we have to learn Maseches Brachas, Maseches Shabbos, Maseches Pesachim, those Masechtas that are shayach to Halacha Maisa, because Nasa, if we don't learn Pesachim, how are we going to know how to make a Pesach Seder? So Nasa means Torah as a vehicle in order to observe mitzvahs. What does Nishma mean? Says the Beis HaLevi. Nishma means, everyone said, well, this is a sugya that comes up in the Gemara about Tumah V'Tahara. So, most people, guys your age, Tumah V'Tahara, come on, Rabbi, it's a good name. Tumah V'Tahara. Like we're reading the Parsha of the Mishkan. Parsha of the Yachal, come on, I'm not building no Mishkan. We're about to start Sefer HaYikra. So some guys, it's one thing to be Mappa Sedra when it's Lech Lecha V'Yeh V'Chai. These are exciting Parshas. It's just Mitzrayim, Bo, B'Shal, I can relate to this. I'm going to start talking about a Korban Ola and a Korban Shlom. Come on, Rabbi, it's 2011. No one's bringing Korbanos anymore. What does that have to do with me? Torah is the Dvarshah. Torah is the Shbarach's word. In and of itself, nothing to do with Maisim. Nothing to do with doing mitzvahs. You're not going to bring a Korban today. You're not a Kohen. It doesn't matter. There are certain parshas in the Torah that were given to us just as if it's a Talmud Torah. Finish, end the discussion. So we have Rabbi Yonah who's emphasizing the Talmud Torah as a mechanism towards Shmiras HaMitzvahs. We have the Rambam who's emphasizing Talmud Torah as Talmud Torah in of itself. There's a third part, and that's the Ramban. The Ramban tells us, you know what these psukim mean? That we have to remember the Torah and never forget, and always transmit it to our children, says the Ramban. It's not referring to the words of the Torah. It's not referring to the mitzvahs of the Torah. It's referring to Maimon Har Sinai. We have to remember Maimon Har Sinai and transmit Maimon Har Sinai to our children. What does it mean to remember Maimon Har Sinai? The excitement, the geshmak. There were kolos and rokim, there was a kol shofar. Whoa! This is the experience of Maimon Har Sinai. This is the emotional side of Har Sinai. I'm not talking about the nitty-gritty halach. The nitty-gritty halach is important. That was the Rambam, but it's the geshmak, it's the excitement. You transmit it to your children what it means to celebrate Shabbos, what it means to celebrate Yontif, what it means to have a Pesach Seder. Show your children what Avas HaTorah means. Show your children what Simchas HaTorah is all about. Where do you get that from? You remember. Remember what it was like on Shavuos. Remember what it was like in Mamre HaSinai. That's what you have to transmit to your children. That's a whole third part of the story. There are three halakim, there are three components that are absolutely critical to transmitting to the next generation, to our children, to our talmidim. Number one, we have to transmit to them the message that Talmud Torah is kinetic kula because Talmud Torah is mevel de maisa. That to think that we're going to create a lifestyle of observant Jews without an absolute commitment to Talmud Torah, so we're wasting our time. It's not going to happen. Talmud Torah is the prerequisite for a life of Shemiras HaMitzvahs. Number two, even without that, Talmud Torah is Dvar Hashem. Talmud Torah is the Kodesh Baruch Hu's word. Every minute, every second, every word that we learn, whether it's a sugya, whether it's a mishabur in Hilchos Shabbos, or whether it's a mishka in Maseches Uktzin, something which is so far removed from us, everything is Dvar Hashem, an opportunity to connect to Kodesh Baruch, to learn the Dvar Hashem. That's the Rambam's version of Talmud Torah. And the Ramban is that one shouldn't make the mistake to think that it's enough just to have the literal learning, just enough just to have the technical side of learning. No, it's got to be combined with a gishmak, with an excitement, with a spirituality, with emotions, with a feeling. That's the Ramban's version. A combination of these three. It's Talmud Torah, Shemiras HaMitzvahs, Talmud Torah as a world, as an ending of itself, combined with an Avas HaTorah, with a Simchas HaTorah, with a Simcha being Davik BaKadosh Baruch Hu. All of the above, if we perfect that in ourselves, if we don't forget that, if we're able to make our lives based on these three Yesodos, then we'll be able to V'Adat V'Vanecha, L'Vnei V'Vanecha. That'll be the secret of our continuity. So the Emes, you know why Klal Yisrael is still here? You know why the Jewish people are still here? Because the Torah is still here. Because the Torah is eternal. Why is the Torah eternal? Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is eternal. The Kadosh Baruch Hu is always here. No one can ever, Chalil Chalil, destroy Kadosh Baruch Hu. Can't fight against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu is Uhoya, Behova, Behiyah. Kadosh Baruch Hu will be here forever. His Torah, which is his Chochmah, will be here forever. And the more we connect to him, to his Torah and to him, we are also assured that we will be here forever as well. Mark Twain didn't have that. He was very good at writing novels about the Mississippi River, but he didn't know that. You can't blame him. He never learned the Daf Gemara. He never learned Torah Shrak. He didn't have Shtipul Torah. But that's the answer to this, Kasha. The answer to why there are still Jews here today, the answer to why we're still here, Baruch Hashem, today, where we're sitting in Eretz Yisrael, in a country that 150 years ago was a desert, was a midbar, and now Baruch Hashem is blooming. It's blooming not only physically, but it's blooming with Torah, Mitzvah, and Kedusha, and Tara. The answer is because of Kedush Baruch Hu is Kayim Lad, his Torah is Kayim Lad, and his people are Kayim Lad as well. So if you want to be eternal, everybody wants eternity. Nobody wants to be, nobody wants to die. Everyone wants to hold on to eternity. Everyone wants to hold on to something that's nitzchi. The more you connect to Kedush Baruch Hu's Torah, the more you will also be assured to be connected to eternity, to be connected to nitzchi. Thank you.